Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Now, we all long to someday go on that dream bucket list holiday, but for one Dublin man, that dream quickly turned into disaster when earlier this month, while on a once-in-a-lifetime holiday in Alaska, the seaplane he was travelling on came crashing down in a remote forest. By some miracle, he survived, and he joins us now to tell us more about his experience. Sean Killeen told his story to Kitty Holland in the Irish Times. And Sean, you're very welcome to the programme, and thank you for speaking to us this afternoon. Firstly, you might just tell us about the trip, in advance of the trip. Why did you decide to go on it in the first place?
Hi, Sarah. How are you doing? Yeah, I think I've always been a kind of a keen fly fisherman, especially in the last few years. And over COVID lockdown, my father-in-law, Joe, retired. And we had both kind of threatened to go on a fishing trip for his retirement present. So we found a YouTube channel online, and the guys on that channel kind of did a similar fishing trip, and we nearly mirrored it, and we headed off to Alaska for this kind of bucket list holiday, if you will.
Okay, so that sounds fantastic. You get to Alaska. Where did you go in Alaska?
So we went to, we flew from Dublin to Seattle into Anchorage, and then we drove for 2.5 or 3 hours to Soldotna. So it's on the Kenai Peninsula.
Beautiful. I haven't been, but it just sounds amazing out there. Can you describe then the hours in advance of the flight and the crash?
Yeah, so it was a very early morning flight. So we got up and we were meeting at 7:15 or 6:30 or something like that. We got onto the plane and we flew for 90 minutes west of Soldotna over the Kenai Peninsula and landed in Lake Clark National Park. We landed in Keejack Lake. And we were due to fish Keejack Lake and Keejack River as well. So we went off on our fishing adventure, hiking through the forest with the fishing guide. There was four kind of fishermen there as well. And we fished for grayling for the day. And we had a great day. The weather was amazing. It's so scenic. And once we wrapped up, we hiked back to the plane, got on board, did all the safety checks, took off and crashed.
Okay, so I'm going to back you up there a little bit. What time was it roughly in the afternoon when you got on the plane?
When we got on the plane, it was between 4:30 and 4:30.
And so it's still bright out, is it?
Yeah, so just the time of year at the moment in Alaska, it's bright for about 20 hours a day.
Oh, wow, okay. And what's the plane like?
So it's the 6-seater de Havilland Beaver. So it's 3 rows of 2 seats. So we had the pilot and the guide in the front seat. Two other tourists in the 2 seats ahead of us, and then myself and Joe sitting in the back 2 seats. Essentially like
it's really tiny.
It's like sticking wings on your car. Do you know that kind of way? You feel very exposed. You can kind of smell the engine, and it's all very loud.
Okay, and were you nervous at all, like on your way out there, or even when you got to go on your way back? I mean, it's really like a tiny plane.
Oh, I'm kind of nervous on commercial flights. Would you know that? So this plane was heightened 10 times, you know. I wasn't freaking out. Once we got up into the air, I was kind of fine and just kind of had to ride it out. We didn't really think that it was going to be a 90-minute flight, though. We thought it would be like, you know, over the hills, 20 minutes up and down, and then we could fish and then 20 minutes home. But it was kind of, there's a lot more to it than that. We flew through this kind of mountain pass at lower height than the peaks of the mountains and flying over glaciers and fjords and really beautiful scenery, but I was kind of nervous throughout the flight.
So on the return trip then, in advance of the crash, you were on this small little plane, and as you say, it's like a car with wings. Did everything seem normal when you took off and you got into the air? Was there any sign anything was going wrong?
Everything felt pretty normal. It was a float plane, so we were taking off from water and we had landed on water. We did a couple of kind of loops around the lake. I think what the pilots do is warm up the engine, and they do some tests on the throttle and different things. And then we took off, and it seemed fine to me. I was kind of like more relaxed because it was the second leg and we'd done the first leg already. And I was kind of like looking out the window and taking in the scenery. And then I noticed the plane do like a hard left turn where the plane banked really steeply left. And shortly after that, in the space of about 10 seconds, we were on the ground.
From the air, on the ground in 10 seconds.
Crashed through the trees and ended up on the ground, yeah.
And what was going through your head? I suppose maybe you don't have time for anything to go through your head in that period of time.
No, I think it was a little bit different than the plane crash you see in movies and stuff where the plane is dropping from really high altitude. Because this was kind of just a takeoff. It was all happening so fast. I had a couple of seconds to look out the window and understand what was happening. And then I kind of tried to press my hands into the ceiling and the wall beside me just to really press myself into my seat. So I wouldn't kind of fly forward or bang my head or anything like that. That was the only really thoughts that were running through my head, is kind of protect myself and then brace for impact.
And where exactly did the plane crash? What did it crash into?
The side of a mountain. So the lake that we were in had mountains on three sides of it. It was like a natural amphitheater. So it was steep, forested mountainside we crashed into. So the plane would have crashed through some trees, and then my memory of it is that it hit its right wing and then flopped down flat. So it was heavily vegetated terrain.
And I mean, I'm assuming then from what you said, the pilot didn't give any warning. You know, there was no, you know, something's wrong.
No.
Hold on. There was no time for that by the sounds of things.
Absolutely not. I think you'd be expecting like a beeping and a red light and a kind of a brace for impact kind of thing. But there was none of that at all. We just smashed into the ground.
So what happened then? You smashed into the ground. How was everybody?
So the pilot was caught. He had a big cut on his head, and there's blood kind of like pouring down onto his face. And my father-in-law, Joe, had damaged his eye. He'd also broken his pelvis, but we weren't aware at that point. But I could see his eye. The white of his eye had kind of filled up with blood. So it was fairly horrifying. And we were trying to kind of not to draw too much attention to that kind of stuff. The hatch of the door was off the right-hand side of the plane, and there was some clear fluid or liquid leaking into the plane. So it was time to make sure everyone was conscious and then escape from the plane as soon as possible. So we all crawled out of the plane, and then maybe 30 meters up the side of the mountain, we scrambled up there and then kind of took a minute to regroup and gather ourselves.
And how were you?
In shock, I'd say. You know, it's so surreal. You kind of go into fight or flight mode straight away. There's no real, I think you're just running purely on adrenaline and instinct at that point.
And did anyone say anything? Did the pilot say anything? Or?
Yeah, there was a couple of statements made. The pilot asked, had we heard the pitch of the engine change? And that's kind of an open question still. Like, I'm not sure that I did hear the pitch of the engine change. And the pilot was saying, you know, I did my best. The engine failed. I couldn't keep the plane up. The plane lost power, things like that. So there was a little bit of that. And then we became very aware that we were trapped 160 miles from kind of civilization nearly. And we needed to figure out a way to get home.
Right. So how do you do that then? I don't know, and perhaps this is a really silly question, but do mobile phones work that far out, or how do you contact people?
No, we had that SOS message appearing on our phones. So there was no masts or anything near us. So the modern planes have a transponder that goes off in the case of a crash. So there'd be some sort of GPS beacon alerting local authorities or whoever was the closest that our plane had gone down. Also, the pilot and the fishing guide had their own GPS transponders with them as well. So we sent out a signal saying that the plane had gone down. But I think it was maybe an hour or an hour and a half of trekking through the forest before we got a response to say that they had received it.
And was it cold? I mean, what is the weather like in Alaska this time of year?
Similar enough to home. Okay. It's probably 15 degrees when we were there. The water is really cold because it's glacial. But when you're out of the water and you're hiking, we were fairly hot. It was very sunny that day as well. So we were just trekking through the forest in the heat, you know.
Okay, and what was going through your head at that stage? You know, I know you've got the transponders with you. I know you're probably in shock, but I mean, did it ever occur to you that maybe people wouldn't come in time?
Definitely, yeah. Our aim was to, you know, scramble down the mountain and trek through the forest until we found a stream, and then follow the water downstream to find a bigger body of water and ultimately get to the ground. And that's all that we were doing. We'd no plan other than that. Get back to the lake maybe that we took off from, and a different tourist plane with fishermen in it would maybe rescue us. But halfway through that trek, we got notification that the authorities knew we were down. And then there were some local planes circling above us. So they kind of knew where we were and they were providing support from the air. But beyond that, we were then worrying about wolves and bears and moose that have a moose calf can be very aggressive as well. So the pilot and the fishing guide both had guns and they had to take them out just for our safety at that point.
Oh my gosh, Sean, that sounds properly terrifying. After a terrifying
ordeal. Yeah, it was fairly traumatizing.
And how was Joe? How was your father-in-law?
He was okay. So initially he fainted once we got out of the plane. And then he was in a bit of shock. He was kind of like vomiting a little bit. And he had a broken pelvis that we didn't know. But he walked for most of it, to be fair to him. And then we kind of carried him towards the end. He was getting very tired and kind of weak. So we had to carry him some parts towards the end. But he did really well over the course of the day. For someone that was that badly injured, it was an incredible achievement to be able to get down the mountain at all.
Absolutely. So you see the planes are circulating above you, and then you know, at least they know where you are. How was the rescue operation put into place then? How did that all work?
So we arrived at a kind of a gravel bank where the water level was quite low, and we were able to walk out to a little island, and then a military helicopter had our GPS coordination and our coordinates, and they were able to tell the pilot that they were coming based on the GPS transponder that he had. So they arrived maybe an hour and a half after we got to that gravel bank in a big military helicopter, and they were able to land us, and they took us all on board, and they kind of patched up the pilot and patched up Joe as best they could. They kind of bandaged his head, and then they flew us all to Port Allsworth, which is like I'm not sure if it's a military base, but it's a tiny little town in the mountains, 10 minutes flight away. And they dumped four of the passengers there, which is the pilot, the guide, and the two other tourists. And they took myself and Joe then to the hospital in Anchorage.
And how was Joe? Did he need much treatment?
Yeah, he just needed to get his eye checked, and he needed to have some scans and things. And it turned out that he had a broken pelvis. So he was very banged up, badly bruised and sore, as you'd imagine. But he was checked out of hospital then a few hours later, and we went back to the hotel, or a hotel. We had a big struggle to find a hotel and all that kind of stuff. We were kind of wandering around with no mobile phones, no wallets, and wrapped in fishing waders and fishing boots as well.
Oh God, I'm sorry.
Really
now, the dream holiday sounds like a holiday from a nightmare holiday. What about your family? How did they react? And were they aware this was all going on while it was going on?
No, it was complete radio silence just because of where we were and how far away we were, and then the time difference. So I think once I was up and about the next day, I contacted my wife, and I had to lead with the, listen, we're both safe, we're both alive. However, we've been in a plane crash. And then, we kind of discussed everything and took it from there, I guess.
And then you stayed. You stayed on your holiday.
Yeah, well, we kind of had to at that point. I mean, the worst thing that could have happened had happened, I guess. So it was only going to get better from there, I think. And we had no more plane flights internally organized. So it was all boats from there. So the next couple of days, we did some salmon fishing and some rainbow trout fishing and drifting down these beautiful rivers in these kind of drift fishing boats, which was amazing.
Okay, well, I'm glad you were able to enjoy the rest of your holiday. I just finally then, how are you now, Sean? How are you both now? You know, that is, you may still be in shock. I don't know. That's a really traumatizing event.
Yeah, I'd say I'm not fully back to normal yet. Definitely on the way, but I kind of get a bit overwhelmed at times and maybe a little bit restless. But I'm definitely much better than I was when I first landed in Ireland. I was kind of having trouble sleeping and stuff for a few days, but I'm completely back to normal now nearly. So I'm looking forward to getting back to the slower pace of life that I'm used to, I guess. And Joe's doing really well. He's stiff and sore, as you can imagine, but he's recovering well. We're both looking forward to getting back out on the rivers in Ireland now fishing.
Yeah, beautiful. And was it difficult getting back on the plane to come home?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, definitely. That was something that even, you know, days before the flight, I was kind of worrying about it.
Okay. Well, I'm really, really glad to hear that you both got home safely and that you're both well, and that you were able to, I suppose, enjoy some of the holiday at least. And thank you for joining us to tell us. That's an extraordinary story. I really appreciate it. That's Sean Killeen there telling us about his once-in-a-lifetime holiday in Alaska. Thanks, Sean.